This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. When historians look back in this period of American history and try and figure out what the heck happened, there will be lots of theories about how a failed casino owner managed to be elected to the White House. And there are multiple factors that brought America to this point with Donald Trump. But a new Frontline documentary makes the case that anti-immigration rhetoric is the driving force that created the Donald Trump presidency. The documentary is called Zero Tolerance. It airs tonight on PBS in San Antonio at 9 o'clock on KLRN. Michael Kirk is the filmmaker, and there's lots of ways for you to join our conversation this afternoon. It's 210-614-8980. That's the number to call with your questions and comments, 210-614-8980. You could email questions and comments to The Source at tpr.org. Tweet at us at tprsource. Michael Kirk, welcome to The Source. And we're going to start off with an audio clip. This is from the during the Obama administration. It looked like that the Republicans were about to make a deal to fix immigration.
And even people like Sean Hannity went on the air and said, we need to rethink our position on immigration. I was wrong to take such a hard line on immigration.
You create a pathway for those people that are here. You don't say you got to go home. And that is a position that I've evolved on.
Hannity even invited a well-known reality TV star onto his show.
I think it's getting very tough to win as a Republican. Look, they've lost on immigration. They're going to have to do something on immigration because, you know, our country is a different place than it was 50 years ago. And so we'll see what happens.
In the face of all that, Steve Bannon and Breitbart found themselves in the political wilderness.
More Republicans are now changing their stand.
Bannon decided to fight back.
So, Michael Kirk, your Frontline documentary airs tonight on PBS, Zero Tolerance. And you start off by showing that during the Obama years, there was it looked like there were that things were a lot different.
In the aftermath of losing to Obama in 2012, when in the Mitt Romney loss, Republican establishment figures did what they call the autopsy, which evaluated what it would have taken to beat Obama. And one of the things they discovered, the most important thing from a lot of their perspectives, was they had to open up the Republican Party to be friendlier and more welcoming to Hispanic voters. And that led them to the a position that what they should do is join with the impulse by Democrats to pass a bipartisan a bill in Congress that would open all of that up. So that was the Republican establishment's strategy in the immediate aftermath of their defeat at the hands of Barack Obama.
So Barack Obama's reelection, the big chatter was about the power of the Latino vote. And the Republicans did not have it, but the Democrats did. And now the Republicans are figuring out how do we get the Latino vote. Let's come to the table on immigration. But there was a group of insurgents that you talk about in the documentary that had a different idea. They wanted to go a different direction. Can you talk about that?
Sure. There were three really political outsiders, really people on the right, way out there on the edge. Jeff Sessions, who eventually will become the Attorney General, Steve Miller, his staff aide, and Steve Bannon, a sort of we've all heard of him now, but at the time he was just a sort of gadfly, a provocateur. He ran a website almost nobody had heard of at the time in 2013 called Breitbart, very hard right. And they believed, those three fellows, believe that the Republican Party was making a big mistake, that they were misreading who the real base of the Republican Party was, and that the real base of the Republican Party, a sort of nativist, believing in Fortress America, a group of people who would eventually, of course, become the Trump base. Those people were the people that Bannon and Sessions and Miller wanted to stoke up and get in the anti-bipartisan immigration war that they were hoping to cause.
The idea that there was this base in America that was not enthusiastic for, we call it amnesty all the time, and that they would, we're not coming along with this idea, but the Washington, D.C. establishment thought that they could ignore that those people and that they would have to eventually get on board. But then you had Steve Bannon saying, no, we're not going to, and he proved to the establishment that they're going to have to deal with these individuals. And here's a clip from the front line.
Any hope of an immigration reform bill is dead.
Now they would concentrate on finding a candidate for the presidency of the United States.
It's been a legislative priority for decades.
Bannon had been looking for years.
We had Palin in 8 and hoped that she had run in 12.
Well, I'm not a member of the permanent political establishment.
You know, it just didn't work out.
That is not our destiny. It's not
I actually worked with Lou Dobbs and tried to get Lou Dobbs to run in 12 as a populist.
That on the previous policies, if they were...
I actually tried to talk Sessions into doing it. And Sessions goes, and he turns to me and goes, it's not me, I'm not going to do it. He says, but our guy will come along. We'll find our guy. And that guy, a couple of years later, turned out to be Donald Trump.
The House Majority Leader has lost to...
And so, Michael Kirk, in your documentary, Zero Tolerance, why was Donald Trump the right guy?
Well, remember, these guys were real outliers. They were not, and this was not a popular sentiment in the Republican Party by the establishment. They had to demonstrate that they had clout and that the base was really interested in immigration as an issue, in the kind of immigration actions that were different than what the Republican establishment wanted. So they took down Eric Cantor in an election, bringing a Tea Party candidate, David Brat, to Congress. This just sent a thunderclap through Washington, and the bipartisan legislation died as other Republicans felt the shudder of that and stepped back. But finding an establishment Republican who would stick with them on their stance on immigration was a hard thing, as you demonstrated with the clip from even Fox Radio and Fox Television. Even Sean Hannity was with the establishment Republicans on the bipartisan immigration bill. So they needed to find somebody who would go that way, and that somebody, of course, turns out to be Donald Trump, himself a super outlier, and himself someone who decides to take on the cause with Bannon, Sessions, and Miller of a very tough immigration stance.
Right, and the idea that Donald Trump could be their instrument, and even Steve Bannon in the documentary Zero Tolerance, he says that he's not a perfect instrument, but he's the one that worked for them, and they came up with a mnemonic device, build that wall to keep him on message, and Mexico would pay for it, and we're still dealing with the impact of that today. So we're going to continue our conversation when we come back from this break. We'll talk about why the base foundational concept of anti-immigration is critical for Donald Trump's re-election campaign and how that is impacting policymaking today. The number to call in is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. The source continues right after this break.
Donald John Trump, do solemnly swear.
Steve Bannon was put at the top of the food chain as Trump's chief strategist. Stephen Miller, senior advisor to the president. And Jeff Sessions was given one of the most powerful jobs in the cabinet, attorney general.
All of a sudden, they're three of the most powerful people in the country.
On the wall in his war room at the West Wing, Bannon created an immigration action plan.
I said, all we have to do is flood the zone. Every day we hit them with three things, bang, bang, bang. These guys will never be able to recover, but we gotta start with muzzle velocity.
The muzzle velocity, a series of harsh executive orders, commanding the government to build a wall. to detain, to deport, to prosecute.
That's a clip from the Frontline documentary Zero Tolerance airs tonight at 9 o'clock in San Antonio on KLRN, nationally on PBS. Michael Kirk joins us. He's the filmmaker of this Frontline documentary. Flood the zone. That's a great term, and it really describes what the strategy is. So tell us more about that.
Well, basically what they decided to do, Bannon, Sessions, and Miller, was create a lot of executive orders. At one point, they had 100 ready to go, and they thought before anybody could stop them in the government and other agencies, that what they would do is they would just roll these things out. The first one, of course, that they rolled out was what was called the travel ban. Some people called it the Muslim ban, and it was the ban of people from seven countries as part of an anti-terror argument. But what it really was a shock and awe, a beginning of the shock and awe campaign that Bannon, Sessions, and Miller and Trump hoped to do from the very beginning of the administration.
But these executive orders and all, and it's not just this, there's a bunch of this stuff happening in the administration simultaneously, including, you know, with the Secretary of Education, and it's all just one thing after another every day. You can't even keep up. And is so when Stephen Bannon talks about flooding the zone, this is a deliberate strategy to overwhelm the media, the census, and the capacity of the American people to have some sort of understanding of what the heck is going on?
Well, they were very, you know, they were all outsiders except for Sessions, really, Miller a little bit, but certainly Trump and Bannon. And remember, they had promised their base that immigration would be their number one issue. His list that he had in his war room of immigration actions was extremely long, and the promises that Trump had made. So they were getting ready, and they knew that if they could hit everything before the rest of the what they called the swamp, the government, the deep state, the administrative state, they called it all those names, before Washington and the bureaucracy could stop them, it was their intention to get as much out there as possible, even though they hadn't really done any legal review or anything, and the courts immediately jumped in. It was a very convincing and I think effective strategy for a while for them to be out there doing what they're doing, effective in the sense that the base, that group of people that Bannon had told Trump he was going to need to not only get elected, but also to stay in office with a kind of power leverage that the group that they call the base would provide. So they had to do a lot of things that looked like they were really on the attack, and in fact, they were.
The number is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. Michael Kirk is with us. He's a filmmaker of the new Frontline documentary, Zero Tolerance. It seems like when Donald Trump says, I can go out on Fifth Avenue, I can shoot someone, and I'm not going to lose any support. When people wonder, why is it that Donald Trump has this fanatical, unwavering support with this base voter? Is it because they don't care as long as he secures the border and does something about immigration?
It's clear that of all the issues that Bannon and Breitbart and Sessions and all of the Fox News eventually, that they were pushing hard, of all the issues that mattered in the country, immigration and trade became the top two. The base, according to Bannon, is largely composed of working people, and their fear and their anger about immigration, especially as it was stoked so effectively by President Trump on the stump as a candidate, and by things that Breitbart, Fox, talk radio, other websites drummed up. They really made immigration a centerpiece, and in some ways they used the fear and they used the anger of people out there to drive it along. So it becomes, you know, for them, the central issue. And of course, what that means is they have to keep doing things, even in some cases when Trump doesn't want to do them anymore, because another side inside the White House, composed of his daughter and his son-in-law, Jared, and Gary Cohn, and other other more liberal people in the White House that he surrounded himself with as well. Even as Trump wavers here and there on DACA, on family separation, and on other things, Bannon, Sessions, and Miller are able to execute so many things out there that keep the base, going. Some of them, you know, tremendously outrageous, designed from their point of view to create a kind of deterrence. The word will get out into the triangle and other places south of the border to say, don't come here. America is getting tough.
So Bannon, Steve Miller, Donald Trump, they managed to win the White House on this anti-immigration rhetoric and this fear, and other things as well. Are they true believers in anti-immigration, or was this just the ticket to get to the White House to do something else, like tax cuts for the rich or something? Are they really true believers about anti-immigration?
This is a very good question, David, and we spent a lot of time trying to assess that. We did more than 40 interviews with lots of insiders and people who have watched all this happen, and people inside the Trump administration, and I've come to believe that Bannon, Sessions, and Miller, and eventually Trump himself, really, really do believe. Of course, Trump is very good about playing the politics of it all, but Bannon, Sessions, and Miller, I think, really do believe in this idea of a nativist America first, close the borders, anti-immigration, not only anti-immigration, illegal immigration, but also anti-legal immigration. I think they'd really like to be very selective about who comes into the country and keep that lower and lower. And I think they believe that ideologically, that will have an effect on our economy and on our education system and on the cultural aspects of life in America if essentially foreigners are kept out.
In your Frontline documentary that airs tonight, Zero Tolerance, you have a quote from that's attributed to Stephen Miller, who says, anytime the nation is focused on immigration, the president is winning. So even when we have the negative optics of people going to the airport and protesting, and anytime we have people marching in the streets, or we have the video of the children crying in the detention centers, that's a positive optic for the White House, according to Miller.
That's what Miller says, and in their actions kind of prove that. When in the spring of 18, when everybody was going, everybody in the sort of East Coast, West Coast bubbles, and certainly in the media, were uncovering and demonstrating and throwing the images up on television and on the cover of Time magazine, all of that, and just thinking that the outrage and the revelations by the press would change the policy. The fact is that, according to Miller, this was a win for the president. This proved, and why was it a win? It was a win because it fed the hope, anger, and need of his base to demonstrate that he was doing something about the immigration problem, having created it as a political weapon.
So if this quote is true, anytime the nation is focused on immigration, the president is winning. And then when the White House cuts foreign aid to Honduras and El Salvador and Guatemala and destabilizes those countries, and we have more people in dire straits and who have to come to the United States because of that, then that's actually a positive for the White House.
Yes, because from what I can tell from what they say and what people who've been involved in those decisions say, this is a much more black and white issue than that. This is not as
so the more chaos and disruption that the Trump White House can create in immigration, the better off the president is.
Well, exactly. I mean, look at the when it was the 2018 midterms.
The caravans.
The idea of the caravan, yeah, the idea of the caravans being threats, looming threats, I think the calculation was that that is, anything okay. that happens like that is good news for the president and anybody who's running on his coattails.
I'm going to take a caller here. Bonnie. Hi, Bonnie. Welcome to The Source. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. When I look at this situation, I see a whole bunch of working class people that don't normally vote connect new Donald Trump from his television program, and that brought, and then when he started talking all this immigration stuff, that piqued all their fears, and they came out and voted like they never did before.
Bonnie, thank you for that. So Michael Kirk with the Frontline documentary Zero Tolerance, did Donald Trump's strategy or Steve Bannon's strategy add more voters to the Republican Party during that election?
I think there's no question. Of the many complicated reasons why Donald Trump won the electoral vote and won in states like Wisconsin and Michigan and Pennsylvania, you know, far away from the southern border, far away from down where you are, yet they still feared the idea of immigration down there, of caravans of people coming. By building that fear as part of the equation of why working class people were having so much trouble keeping companies in their town, getting jobs, getting well-paid jobs, that fear out in America is a real fear. And all Bannon and Trump had to do was just wake it up, and they knew that. And Bannon knew that. That's how they took down the Republican establishment immigration bill in the early going back in 13-14. So it was fairly straightforward in some ways once they found Trump, who was willing to bang the drum. Once they had him, and he was very good, as we know, 14 years on The Apprentice, he was a reality TV star, and as a reality TV star, you know what you need to do to deliver audiences week to week, and President Trump is very good at that, and was very good during the election, and a lot of people who felt Washington, justifiably felt Washington was never listening to them. Things were not good economically, and if they could blame immigration on for their woes, they were very happy to sign up, and they did, and they voted for him across a big swath of America. This was not an accident that so many people voted for the president. Bannon and Donald Trump, it worked. The strategy worked, and it has still worked. It still works. It's his base is, as far as you can tell, his base and the Republican Party and Republican voters are very much with him in a very divided country. 90% of Republicans say they will vote for him in the upcoming election. That's unbelievable. And a lot of it is because of the headlines he gets and the war he wages against the what he calls the invasion of the border.
We're taking a break. We'll continue our conversation in just a moment. Michael Kirk is with us. He's a filmmaker for the new Frontline documentary, Zero Tolerance. It airs tonight on PBS KLRN in San Antonio at 9 o'clock. Our phone line is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. I got some callers on the board. I'll get you on the air when we come back from this break. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. Stay tuned.
Immigration.
I think we need to all get in before the wall goes up.
Health.
The Promotora, they have all the resources that can get them the help that they need.
Art.
There's this kind of subversiveness to it, right?
We cover all these topics and more on Fronteras as we examine issues along the border and beyond. I'm Norma Martinez. Download Fronteras where you find your favorite podcasts.
Welcome back to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. We're continuing our conversation with Michael Kirk, filmmaker with a new frontline documentary, Zero Tolerance, that airs tonight, talking about the Trump administration and its connection with anti-immigration rhetoric. But also we bring in Erica Lee. She is the director of the Immigration History Resource Center at the University of Minnesota and author of a forthcoming book, America for Americans, The History of Xenophobia in the United States. Erica Lee, what's happening today with the Trump administration? Is this a new phenomenon? And that's really a softball question, so go for it.
Right. So the answer, of course, is yes and no. What's so great about the documentary is that it brings us very close and intimately into this very dramatic change in immigration politics and the move of xenophobia to the center of American policy. But of course, the backstory is much longer. I would say that by the time Donald Trump is running for office, the idea that particularly Mexican immigration is an invasion of criminals who threaten the country, that's an idea that had been even normalized and long established, at least going back 30 years or so.
Let me go to a caller. This is Chase. The number is 210-614-8980. Chase, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi. My question is related to the Mariel boat lift, which was that policy from the 1980s that allowed 125,000 Cuban refugees to come into the United States, fleeing the Castro regime. And I don't think there's any denying the positive effects of displaced Cubans on American society. But research, I think, in the 90s showed that it was absolutely positive. But then there's been a lot of discussion lately that it maybe somehow was not the case. But I feel like that's maybe more a targeted point on choosing hate over hospitality. So could you shed some light on that Mario boat lift policy?
All right. Thank you for the call, Chase. Erica Lee?
Yeah, absolutely. I think this is it's a perfect follow through to this this point I was trying to make in terms of the debate over immigration. This debate over what the caller said, hate versus hospitality, goes back a long time. And the 1980s and 1990s is a period when we're not only discussing and debating the arrival of refugees from Cuba, but also refugees from Southern and Eastern Asia, as well as growing numbers of immigrants coming in from Asia, Latin America, and Africa. And this is a great change, almost a reverse in policy and immigration that had been in place for at least a century, that was mostly favoring European immigration. And so this idea that the United States is browning, that it's going to become a majority-minority country, is really what's driving some very reactionary immigration politics, starting in places like Florida, but also California, and the beginning of a grassroots, mostly conservative, far-right, extreme proposals that want to deny undocumented immigrants, for example, all public benefits like education and health. So it's this turning point in the 1980s and 1990s that really help us understand how we could get to this centralization of xenophobia during the Trump era.
Let's go to another caller. This is Debbie. Debbie, hi. Welcome to The Source. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi. I'm from the Texas Panhandle, where all my family farms cotton. They are anti-immigrant, ironically, despite the fact that the majority of the work has almost always been done by people south of the border. Regarding our conversations, I have tried to appeal to reason in that immigrants contribute more to the economy than they take. I've tried to appeal to religion. I've tried to appeal to humanity, and I get nowhere. And I wonder if your guests have any suggestions on how to have discourse, conversation with people who are anti-immigrant.
Good question, Debbie. Thank you for that. And I'm going to give that direct question to Erica Lee in just a second. But first, I want to divert to Michael Kirk, who made the Frontline documentary Zero Tolerance. You don't look at the documentary, the actual implications, the impact of immigration in the United States. You're just looking at the use of the rhetoric, anti-immigration rhetoric. So how did y'all make that decision?
Well, that's the story that I think it's the central story of the Trump administration right now, which is how they turned resentment about immigration into a political weapon. That's really the thrust of our film. It's how the power politics in Washington managed to elect a president of the United States who has now acted on that set of grievances and resentment about immigration to do the things that are in the headlines every single day on every newspaper, including the DACA Dreamers situation, including zero tolerance and separation, and all of the things that are happening now where there's, if maybe the Trump administration was saying there was a crisis on the border in 17 and even early 18, by now there really is a crisis on the border, and they don't really know what to do about it, but they do know this most important thing. Steve Miller has survived inside the very epicenter of power in America as the advisor to Trump on this issue, and he survives because this is the issue Trump intends to take into the his reelection campaign in 2020, and that tells you something about where the base is or where the relatives of the woman who just called in are coming from. It's one thing to try to reason with your friends, relatives, coworkers, and others, but when the president of the United States is determined to feed that anger and resentment and use it as a political weapon, which is what he's doing, that's fair enough. He can do that. It's America. But that is what has actually happened. We thought that was the story that needed to be told. There's a lot of coverage of what's happened on the border and the cages and the kids and all the heartbreaking stuff, but to hear that that is what the president of the United States would consider winning is the important thing that we thought we'd bring to the table for discussion.
But Michael Kirk, also your film Zero Tolerance looks at in a way the power of the right wing messaging machine, the radio and the websites, programming the base to get riled up about these issues that are actually not issues. We do not have an immigration problem in the United States. The only immigration problem that we have in the United States is that we actually don't have enough immigrants coming into the country. Not that we have too many or the wrong kind.
Well, it's certainly the right-wing message, as you say, the right-wing messaging machine is very effective, has commoditized it, makes billions of dollars telling this story, and the president of the United States is expert at manipulating and using Fox, where he was a guest host all through the 11, 12, 13, 14 period when he was a reality TV star, and in everyone's homes for 14 years on a reality TV show. So it's the messaging machine is absolutely effective at keeping this issue going. The crisis, to the extent that there is one, is real and affects the lives of people, certainly down along the border and people who are waiting to immigrate into the United States, but in a very interesting way, that machine needs the crisis to keep going and to keep making money.
Erica Lee, now to you, the question from Debbie about how do we talk to people, how do we deprogram them from the hate?
You know, first I just have to applaud Debbie for going after this hard topic and trying all of the different angles, the same ones I would choose as well, the ones that talk about the contributions to taxes and the contributions to the economy and appealing to what what we learn in our various different faiths as well. So I kind of hear her frustration and I share it as well, because I think if these were easy conversations and if it was easy for us to sway people with facts and with stories, and certainly the people that Debbie's talking about, people who depend, it sounds like, on immigrant labor, that if these were easy, the solutions would be easy as well. I guess, you know, my only piece of advice is to keep trying. I do think that when we're facing something as monumental and effective as what we've just been talking about in terms of a very well-resourced and effective messaging machine from one side, that we have to counter that with facts. There are lots of places, lots of organizations, non-partisan organizations that have very easy to use fact sheets about immigration to try to demystify many of the myths about immigration, but also I think just the human stories of people to better understand why people do immigrate. How does our immigration system work? How is it that we still rely, need, and will continue to do so, perhaps even more so in the future, on foreign-born workers? So I just say, keep at it. And if she is able to find the solution, then please share it with the rest of us.
We're taking a break. We'll come back with some more callers and questions and comments as we talk about anti-immigration rhetoric now in politics, also about the frontline documentary Zero Tolerance that airs tonight. The number to call in is 210-614-8980. 210-614-8980. What does this do for the upcoming elections? This is going to be a game, a trick that will work twice, or has the American public, have they gotten wise to it? We'll be right back after this break. Stay tuned. You're listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. We're speaking with Michael Kirk with the new frontline documentary Zero Tolerance, airs tonight on PBS, and Erica Lee, the author of the upcoming book America for Americans, The History of Xenophobia in the United States. Let's go to Robert on the phones. Robert, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi. Yeah, I just wanted to say that I think, you know, it's such a ridiculous argument that our problems have anything to do with immigration. I mean, immigrants are wonderful people. They work hard. They only come here to work and try to make a decent living. And we really need the labor. We need people to do the work. There are other people here who want to work, but they all have jobs. And
all right, Robert, thank you for that. So misdirected anger. We have a population, maybe in the Rust Belt, you know, who are angry about the Democrats aren't listening to them, and they think this free trade stuff, globalism, is not good for them, and they worry about the loss of their jobs. They're not thinking about how robots are taking their jobs because they're being told that this is happening because of immigration. So Michael Kirk, did that follow into the documentary you made?
Well, that's very much the when Donald Trump has a sort of polling method of his very own, which is to go into an arena where 60,000 people are, and he discovered from the very beginning of his campaigning, when he was just or sort of getting started, somebody on his staff had said, because Trump, the person on his staff told me that it was hard to keep him on topic. He was all over the place during these big long speeches, so they gave him the mnemonic, the wall. And Mexico will pay for it. And it kept him kind of on track, so they would hold up signs and say, the wall, and then he'd get back to it. And every time he did it, I mean, he's very good at knowing as a, you know, a very experienced reality TV star. He's very good at knowing what wakes the crowd up. And when he would, whenever he would talk about the wall, Mexico, all of that, it just lit the boards up. And he knew it, and he knows it, and he's used it, and had the roar from those arenas in his ears all throughout his presidency, and is hearing it again as he heads out into the country preparing to run for re-election.
Erika Lee, in your book, America for Americans, The History of Xenophobia in the United States, I haven't read the book. I didn't get a copy of it, but I'm wondering about Tammany Hall, and which was originally an organization in New York City which was anti-Irish, anti-immigration. And then as it became, the political reality shifted, it became pro-Irish and pro, you know, and is that what we're, is that something useful to look at in today's politics, because the demographics are the demographics?
Yes. The short answer is yes. Let me just respond to the earlier question first, and that is that immigration is such a perennial hot button issue in the United States because it can serve as this receptacle for American anxiety. So whether it's about the economy, what's working about the economy, what's not working, or foreign policy, who we are as a country and what defines American. Immigration touches upon all of these issues. And so depending on who's in power, who's creating the message, and who is effective at spreading that message, it can morph into either for or against. So you bring up the anti-Irish Catholic movement in the late 1800s as an example of how things might switch. And I think that's an excellent example. The Know Nothing Party, also known as the American Party, was the first political party to really politicize xenophobia, to make immigration or its anti-immigrant standpoint a center of its campaign. They wanted to extend how long it took for Catholic immigrants to become U.S. citizens. When they came into power in Massachusetts, they dismissed all Irish-born state workers, and they limited public office to U.S.-born citizens. So for the 19th century, that is sort of the equivalent of what I think Michael Kirk's talking about today, very extreme immigration policies. But within a generation or even shorter, Irish Catholic Americans came to rule the Democratic Party. And it's very much a story of who has the power to vote and who wields the vote. They were on the outside of American politics, but soon became an essential force that politicians could not ignore. And that is where we are right now. How much is the outrage against Trump-era immigration policy, how much is that going to mobilize another base, younger voters, immigrant, naturalized American voters, et cetera? That's where we really are looking at the 2020 elections.
Right. So, Michael Kirk, the first clip we played was about the Republicans coming to the table during the Obama administration to strike a deal on immigration because they saw the political reality as that they had to somehow get make peace with Latino voters. Now, and they were playing the long game because they were looking at demographics. But we had the Trump administration, Trump and Steve Bannon, they were playing the short game. They saw that they can hijack the resentment that existed in America right then and right now. But the demographics continue to shift in America. So do you think we're going to end up back in that place where we started?
Wouldn't it be ironic if the Republican establishment so vanquished by Bannon, Sessions, Miller, and Trump back in 2013, 14, 15, 16, if they were actually right, if the Republican autopsy turns out to be true, it seems to make a lot of sense to those of us,
But it all depends on this upcoming election, who votes.
Well, it does. In one election is never everything, but it's certainly but 20.
This one's critical.
Seem to indicate something changing out there, and if that's true, if there is a suburban female vote that is not fearful about immigration, but is in fact in favor of immigration, if there are things like that happening and they come to the surface in 2020, you know, the tide could easily turn, and obviously.
Yeah, it could upend Washington, D.C. Let me go to Joe on the phones. Joe, welcome to The Source. Thanks for calling in. You're on the air.
Yes, sir. Thank you. No, I just wanted to make a statement about this this statement that I've heard in the media. I've heard it off and on long before Trump became president or began to run, and that is a statement that's used at the Browning of America. And I'm wondering if that particular statement was created specifically to agitate European people that live here in the United States, because before Europeans came here, everybody here was brown. Mm-hmm. So I'm just wondering if that particular statement was created just to get people more agitated towards people of color.
All right, Joe, thank you for that. You know, people go out and sit by the pool and get brown all the time. So I don't know what they're... Erica Lee, help me. What does that mean?
Yeah, it's part of a larger narrative that Leo Chavez calls the Latino threat narrative. You know, the Browning of America on the face of it sounds pretty matter of fact. It's not so explicitly threatening. It's not like invasion or flood, but the way that it has been used has been to create some sort of anxiety about white displacement, really, you know, as the U.S. becomes more brown, then who is, you know, not part of the country anymore, or who has, more importantly, who has lost power. So the way in which it has been used is one of those sort of coded ways to rally a base.
And I mean, Donald Trump's wife is an immigrant, but she's not brown. So that's not a problem.
No. That's right. And there's questions about how she came and whether she came in, quote unquote, the right way, which is what we hear a lot from those who are against.
Well, she claimed to be a college graduate on her immigration papers, and she's not.
Right. So there's
that's immigration fraud.
There's always been a double standard. There's always been a double standard in terms of who we consider good immigrants, who we consider bad ones, the right ones, the wrong ones, and that access has largely been around race, both historically and today.
Let's go to JP on the phones. JP, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Yeah, so I had a question. You know, do your panelists think that the immigration question that these guys like Stephen Miller and Steve Bannon are doing is it really that big of an issue for them? Or is it just another way to create more chaos and animosity because they want to bring the entire system down? And if we continue to debate it and we continue to talk about it, we're just continuing to grow that chaos and that animosity. So that's my question. Thank you.
Good question, JP. Thanks for calling in. Erica Lee, what do you think?
I think Michael might have more insight into this in terms of whether this is just a political tool or whether they believe it. I tend to think that this is something that they have truly been committed to. It sounds like from the past documents that we've seen from Stephen Miller and certainly what Breitbart's been wanting to do, sort of extending some of those extreme immigration policies that have been in play, that have been part of the far right's political rhetoric and campaign for, again, at least 20, 30 years, that these are positions that they truly believe in. And it's not just political expediency to gain political power.
And Michael Kirk, in about a minute, what do you think?
Yep, that's exactly right, Erica. That is precisely what they believe ideologically. That this is right, and they believe it about Europe, and they believe it about the United States, and Bannon has been in Europe agitating for this. So we know that that's what it is. The president, on the other hand, seems to be able to use it as a weapon, as a political weapon, but his record, even as president, seems to show a kind of wavering on this. So I'm not so sure ideologically where he is on this. I think politically he's with them all the way.
Michael Kirk is a filmmaker with the new Frontline documentary, Zero Tolerance, airs on PBS tonight at 9 o'clock here in San Antonio on KLRN. Erica Lee is the director of the Immigration History Research Center at the University of Minnesota, author of the forthcoming book, America for Americans, A History of Xenophobia in the United States. And this is The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. Thanks for tuning us in.
This has been The Source on Texas Public Radio. The Source is hosted by David Martin Davies, produced by Kim Johnson and Dallas Williams, with production assistance provided by me, Ruben Garcia, and Jan Ross Piedad. Dan Katz is TPR's news director.